Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on where you are in the world, and welcome to another great episode of Interop Radio. This is Interop Live for Wednesday afternoon, April 29th. We're here live on the expo floor of Interop 2015, and I tell you what, we are in the middle of what's being called the Interop Happy Hour, and sure enough, the guests out there are getting happy. I'm seeing lots of people having great conversations with members of the booth staffs. They're having productive conversations, and I think this is critical, being sure to remain well hydrated. That's critical when you're out here in Las Vegas. The vendors have been sponsoring food and anti-dehydration materials for our Interop attendees. It looks like a great time being had out there. And we're going to have a great time in the studio here because today I've got one of my colleagues, one of my favorite folks to have on the radio with me, Scott Ferguson is here. Scott, welcome to Interop Radio.
Thank you, Kurt, and I'm glad to be here as always.
Now, Scott, I've kind of been trapped here in the Network Operations Center and the studio. I mean, they let me out once in a while, but they keep a string tied to my foot, so they reel me back in. You've actually gotten to be out there and see some of the conference sessions, see some of Interop out here. What have you seen out in Interop that has kind of excited you?
Well, they do keep me pretty well trapped too at a certain point. You know, the joys of what I've always called middle management in our business. But I think when you walk the floor, there's always, I mean, all those basics are there. You've got cloud, you know, the data, what do you do with data? How do you process all this data that we have? Where do you store it? Obviously, that where does the cloud come in? And I think, too, we talked a little bit about, and this was also at the Information Week conference, you know, they talked a little bit about Internet of Things, not as much as I thought they would. But again, what you're seeing, too, as far as, like, sensors go and just how you can kind of collect more data. And then once you have it, you know, what the heck do you do with it all, you know? And,
right.
and can you afford to keep it for that long? So I think we're seeing some of those core issues, and it just gets more and more complicated as the years go by. So we're not really telling anybody what they don't know, but it's just like, you know, it's here now. You have to, man, you can't just deny that this kind of transformation is happening. So I think you always have, you know, that sort of conflict between you need to get this done, and how do you do it? And it's just getting more and more and more and more. And maybe we're that network provider with that solution to do it, or, you know, we have a better way to do it. So I think that's the sort of issues that I'm picking up as I kind of, you know, make my very slow wanderings around the facility here in Las Vegas.
I'm curious because, as you say, we've heard a lot about the Internet of Things prior to coming to Interop. Do you get the sense that for the people who are out there not talking very much about it, it's because it's still out there in the future? This is something that isn't a present concern because it's just not close enough? Or are we just at the wrong part in the hype cycle? Is it something that the hype is way ahead of the reality?
Well, I think because you sort of had the ultimate IoT breakthrough in the last week, which is the Apple Watch, which I consider part of the IoT revolution, right? That's the wearables, that's the smartwatches. It's something that's not a PC or a smartphone or a tablet. It's something different. It's a wearable. So I think we are going to probably ramp back up the hype cycle at some point on IoT because of this device being out there. And I did see, I was at the Information Week news desk, and a gentleman was going to sit down and speak to one of the hosts there, and he just pulled up his shirt sleeve a little bit, and he had the Apple Watch. So it is out there now, and it can't be denied. And I know there's all this hype about the Apple Watch and what does it mean, and, you know, is it a fashion accessory or something like that? But I think that's going to reignite a lot of issues around IoT, because if that's successful, if it's as successful as Apple would like us to think it's going to be, then I think, you know, not only will other people jump in with that because they'll be on the bandwagons or whatnot, but where do you take it, and, you know, issues about sensors and everything like that. And to go back to this, and the one thing I did hear about sensors was when Sarah Peters interviewed the NBA CIO at the conference, and he talked about, like, we want to get the team, we're working with the teams, we want to put sensors down into the clothing to gather more data to see, and there's this conflict between the teams who probably want to do that themselves and the union who says, well, why are you collecting, you know, at least, you know, why are you collecting this data, which is always the question to ask. But I think it's just a matter of when at this point, as opposed to, you know, it's just a matter of when, as opposed to, like, well, will it or won't it at this point?
You know, I think it's fascinating. You mentioned both the Apple Watch, which is, as you say, a fashion item, regardless of what else it might be. And then the NBA, which has really been very aggressive the last few years about both gathering the statistics and making them available to the fans. We had the CIO of the NBA on a radio and video program over a year ago that Sarah, again, was part of. And they were talking about the way they're using SAP as the back end for all this. I mean, this is not something that they are doing on a shoestring. This is a significant investment the league is making in gathering all kinds of data and giving it to the fans with the expectation that the fans are going to, first, find it interesting, and second, figure out some way to do stuff with it in terms of fantasy leagues or things like that. And to me, it's interesting that you have these two leading things that enterprises are talking about, but the first applications are in, if you will, the frivolous areas of fashion and entertainment.
Well, I also think, too, when we talk about what the NBA is doing, I mean, we're really talking about, to a certain extent, data visualization. So we have, how do you tell the story with data? And I heard that from some other people. How do you tell the story with data? And again, it's nothing new, but again, it's becoming more important because you can't ignore it anymore. It's here, and if the NBA is doing it, well, you know, why the heck can't, you know, we tell, you know, our automotive story or our heavy equipment story or something, or, you know, along those lines. So it is here, and it's got to start somewhere, right? It can't just all be, you know, in the bowels of Wall Street and, you know, spreading out from there because those guys have the money to invest in the latest and greatest. It's got to start somewhere, and you know, hey, why not? You know, why not start on the fashion part of it and see what you can do. At least it gets people talking about it in one way, shape, or form.
Oh, it does at that, and it's going to be interesting to see. Next week, I'm going to be at SAP's Sapphire conference, and they usually have some very interesting applications. So it's going to be interesting to see what kind of, I hate to use the word, seemingly lightweight applications they're going to have, but I know there will be something entertaining. In the past, they've had McLaren talking about the way they were collecting data off all the bazillion parts that go into a Formula One race car. They've had the folks at Burberry talking about how they were gathering data from the retail stores. And it always seems, as you point out, that you've got these very high-touch, very consumer-oriented applications of the technology that are sort of leaping forward and dragging the rest of the enterprise behind them. And I find that fascinating. Another thing that you mentioned was the idea of telling the story of data. We had a person on yesterday, Darvesh, who was a guest on the afternoon show yesterday, talking about that exact topic, how important it is to be able to not just have data, but to tell a compelling story with the information that is derived from that data. That's really where the business benefit comes, when a good, powerful story is told with that data. And he foresees a day when MBA classes include classes in storytelling, because it is just that important in his point of view.
Well, I also think, too, I mean, even kind of beyond that, when we were at the Information Week conference yesterday and the CIO of Walmart spoke, and you talk about a company with a heck of a lot of data, and what do you do with all that data? And they really need to know what's going on because it's so critical to their business. Because as she pointed out, you know, there's no specials at Walmart. They run nothing. They're always driving towards the lowest price. And so that has to be uniform throughout, you know, thousands and thousands of stores just in this, you know, within the borders of the United States alone, not to mention Walmart International and Walmart Online as well. You know, the answer to the non brick and mortar, out there with the Amazons and the Targets of the world. So, I think she also made some good points. You know, just to talk about her for a second. You know, talking about that one comment she made. We don't call them legacy systems, we call them classics. And Curtin, you and I as older gentlemen here can always we don't want to be legacies anymore, we want to be classics. And she said that was very good because it makes the IT guys running that feel that they're still doing something because they have to keep the lights on.
Right.
Even though she is like running through a cycle, and then when you get down to that cycle, you have to start again. Well, what's the new thing that I need? And you know that's how they kind of do it. It's a good morale thing, and I think sometimes how you treat your IT staff gets lost in all these different conversations we have about data and big data and business intelligence, and you know. But what about the guys that are left with, you know, classic legacy systems and, you know, that they have to run it, and it's still a critical backbone part of the entire infrastructure that has a lot of value, but it's not the latest, greatest thing out there.
And, you know, it's important to note with all that we talk about cloud doing, with all that we talk about various virtual servers doing, if you have to crank just massive amounts of I.O., if you have stuff coming in from terminals all over the country, if you have stuff going on with a high transaction rate from lots and lots of sources, there is still nothing out there like a big mainframe to deal with that level of traffic. And so for an awful lot of companies, the mainframe isn't something that they're hanging on to just because they don't have the dollars to replace it. It's still the best solution for a particular data problem they've got.
And why does IBM still sell them? I'm sure if IBM decided that nobody was buying these, they would stop. They're still selling it. I mean, again, you talk about legacy. How many banks want to move off of that mainframe? You know, do they want that downtime when people are trying to get money out of the ATMs? I don't think so. So you hold on to what you have. It makes a nice business for IBM, of course. But, you know, there is something to be said about something that's at least, you know, in all this talk about. And then, of course, today you had the guy at Google, Urs, talking about, you know, how their cloud infrastructure works. And, of course, they did, because they were never burdened by legacy systems.
Right.
So for a certain extent, it tells a very compelling story. But, you know, for your bank that's been there for 75 years and created originally, it's a different story. And Walmart's a story, too. I mean, Walmart's not a 50 years old at this point. Somewhere between 40 and 50, I think she said.
No, that's very true. Remembering that it started with a single store there in Arkansas, it's been around a while.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think. I can remember when Walmart first came to the town where I grew up, and it was before I left for college. So that puts it in the 70s somewhere.
Yeah. And so when you have that, you were there at the IT revolution, right? In the 70s when the mainframe was there, getting into business. It wasn't just a research facility. It wasn't just a research piece of equipment anymore. It was getting into, IBM was selling it into businesses at that point. And so you do have lots of legacy systems. And, you know, we talked to, you know, we also mentioned, too, there's a lot of issues around, and we've written about this on Information Week, of course, too, and Interop as well, the shadow IT issue, and you have stuff in there, and how do you scan your network for whatever's there, and, you know, trying to figure this stuff out. So imagine if you're a Walmart, how many legacy systems do you have that you don't even know about?
Oh, exactly so.
That somebody in 1996 decided this was a great idea and put it in there, and then 2 years later they were gone, and it's still floating through a network at some point in some place.
It's got to be a big number in an organization that large, just because it would be so easy to overlook these things. As you say, you get something in a particular warehouse, in a particular remote office, in a particular store in a very small town, and all of a sudden it's just there, just part of the way they do business in that location, and no one really thinks about how it is or is not tied to the rest of the organization's IT.
And I think that's too why a lot of IT departments are trying to get their handle on, you know, I was walking through and there was a couple mobile device management booths here talking about that, and you know, I think you're learning your lessons a little bit, trying to get ahead of that, trying to make sure that, you know, whatever's on your network, especially coming from the outside, is what you actually want on the network, and nobody's downloading, you know, Amazon Web Services off their smartphone into your data center. So I think that's a big part of it. And I think, you know, mobile device, you know, when we talk about IoT, so we're bringing it all back to where we started, which is, you know, IoT and data collection. And, you know, if it's out there, how do you manage it? And
that's right.
You need mobile device management. It's beyond bring your own device. At this point, it's really that you really have to get a better emphasis. You have to get a better handle on what's coming and what's going.
You know, there's so much going on in all the technology areas, and there's a ton going on in a lot of the human side of IT as well. One of the things that we've talked about a couple of times here on Interop Radio, and I'm curious, I've been watching the people walk by the glass walls in the corner where I live here at the Network Operations Center, trying to sort of just get a general feel for the gender mix here at Interop, because we've heard so much, and we know it's true, about the population of the IT departments of the world skewing fairly heavily towards the male side. You mentioned the CIO of Walmart, who is a woman. When you have been out looking around, have you gotten any sort of sense? I mean, are we truly seeing an industry where women are a rarity? Or is Interop one of the rare places where women are closer to parity with men? Where are we from your general sense? I know you haven't had a chance to do any sort of scientific study of this.
Let me pull all this research that I just happen to have here out of my pocket on the gender.
Standing out at the front door with a clicker watching people go by. But you know, do you get a sense for whether or not that is an issue here as it is in the rest of the industry?
I think here you're seeing a lot of women executives walking around. I'm seeing quite a few CIOs who are women. Adobe, of course, this morning, you know, we were talking with her, and she obviously was one of the bigger keynotes at Interop this morning, talking about, you know, her role at Adobe. Obviously, Walmart, not exactly a small company, has, you know, a CIO who's a woman. I was sitting last night at dinner with a woman. I forget the name of her company. It was somewhere out in the Midwest. They're managing data centers. You know, she was awarded last night with an Information Week award as part of the Elite 100. And, you know, a woman, you know, and just, you know, I very seamless in how they talk. So maybe on the executive level of training, maybe the when you're in the trenches, the true system admins, the IT guys walking around, maybe, you know, that's, you know, heavily toward the still an old boys club to a certain extent, or a middle-aged boys club, as I always say. But I think maybe on the executive level you're seeing some change, which is good, because I think that's where you want to have some fresh thinking at the top. And that's really where you can change a lot if you wanted to change it to make it more diverse, more opinions. What do we need to do that's different? A great way to do it is if you've got really good leaders in the C-suite, whether they're women or men, but you know, the women are definitely there, and I think they're making a lot of good inroads. So,
you know, one of the many interesting things that we've talked about here on Interop Radio, when we were talking about the Network Operations Center, the NOT crew, it does, because it is typically a group of what we have called alpha geeks. These are people who are at the top of their fields in the technical area. There are a small handful of women in the group. And first, I have to say that each of those women is an alpha geek as well. They are not here in any sort of filling a quota way. These are women who are getting the job done and doing a great job. But there are many fewer of them than there are men. We also know that there is a portion of the Interop attendee pool that is made up of people from very small IT organizations, you know, somewhere between one and half a dozen people. Those tend, we see, to skew towards the male. And that's something that we're going to be talking about in the months to come on Interop Radio. I'm putting together I'm just going to call it a special focus week later this summer, where we're going to have some of these alpha geek women talking about their experience and talking about what they have gone through, their path to be where they are now, and address some of these issues, because I think it is a legitimate issue. It's one where there's almost certainly a great deal of creativity and intelligence out there that we're not taking advantage of in the IT industry, just because the people, for whatever reason, don't feel like they belong here.
And I think, you know, that's an issue everybody is struggling with. I mean, we can also talk about, you know, issues of race. You know, are we diverse enough in that way as well? Because, again, you come down to that it's a stereotypical middle-aged white man who is both the system admin and the IT person and the CIO. So, yeah, you have a lot. I mean, yeah, definitely, you know, inroads being made, but a lot of work still to be done to get it to where there's some parity with everything. And, you know, like I said, you are seeing it. Is it as great as you would like? Probably not. There are making, and I don't want to make some pronouncement here that yes, we have achieved parity, or like we're stepping towards it, and it's just right around the corner, because I don't want to get into trouble along those ways. But I think there's encouraging positive signs.
Now, I think the fact that that so many of us are having the conversation, that in and of itself is a positive sign, and we are seeing more young women go into the field, and that's a positive sign. So lots of good stuff that can happen, but obviously a lot of progress that still needs to be made. And I have to say that I am excited by the fact that Interop is a place where those kind of conversations can happen. Interop is certainly built around the technology side of things. There are all kinds of products out here, and people come here to talk about the technology, talk about the new products, things like that. But with all that said, when you talk to the attendees, when you talk to people in the NOC team about why they come, they all say their number one or number two reason are the people. You know, they're here because of the people they meet, the people they know from previous times here at Interop, and the things that they're learning. You know, it is a human-to-human contact that people value in a setting like Interop, and I think that's very powerful.
And I think, too, it goes down to the fact that in the days of mobility, social media, you know, cloud computing, where you're not really in a physical spot anymore. You know, it is still the face-to-face that does the most for you. And it's very rare to get together like this. You know, as you know, there's a couple dozen tech shows every year, and, you know, it's just a great way to meet people. And I think with Interop, because it's, you know, it is on the neutral side, you're not being sold product by anybody in particular who's hosting the show, you can meet your colleagues in a more relaxed atmosphere, and you can get some good career advice. And, you know, like you said, if you've been coming to Interop for the last 20 years, you've probably grown up through the industry and you've changed jobs a few times, and you've probably gotten to, you know, the point where you're seeing people who started out in X and now they're Y, and maybe they helped you or you helped them, or, you know, some combination thereof.
That's right. The faces stay the same. It's just the polo shirts and business cards that change.
We get a little grayer and a little thinner on top, too. We can't, you know.
I have no idea what you're talking about there, Scott. Well, I know that we're getting close to the time when I need to let you go, because you've got a busy schedule here. But one thing that I did want to ask, we've still got a solid day of Interop ahead of us tomorrow. Got a little bit more time. The happy hour is not over here today. What are you looking forward to in the remainder of your time at Interop? Are there particular sessions? Are there particular things you want to see or conversations you want to have? What are you still looking ahead to?
You mean, you know, sans the fight on Saturday night that coming up here?
Well, I know you've got your front row tickets for that, but yeah, before you get to the fight.
Yeah, Manny dropped them off this morning, actually, come to think of it. You know, I'm seeing a lot of, I know this year there was like more of an emphasis on security, and I know security is always this like hot topic, but I'm interested to see how your system admin, your IT administrator, your CIO, who maybe is not the security expert, like, what do they need to know about security? And in a day and age when security is more and more important and more a total disruptor of your business, like the Heartland person was talking about on Tuesday, you know, where does it go from there? So I'm interested to see like how some of the security conversations are coming from, and what we all kind of need to do to make sure that things are secure. And again, it goes back to that mobile device management issue that I'm always kind of interested in, to see how that's working with everything. So I think over the next, you know, what is a day, you know, half a full day, a half day today, a half day on something like that, where those kind of conversations are going to be going. I think it's good to get the security, that it's not a, you know, an RSA type of thing, that it's a security conversation that's happening on a much broader level. It's not just, you know, hacking and black hat type of thing. It's a broader, especially when we're talking about the network, because I mean, the network is the last line of defense before something comes in. And we're all about networking, right? We're all about networking here. And, you know, you got to, you know, the keeping the pipes, you know, free of those problems.
Yeah, Scott brings up something that is important, because UBM, the parent company of Information Week, also owns Interop. Interop is a UBM property. And we also own Black Hat, which is a very deep dive kind of security property. So if you truly need that deepest dive, the highly technical kind of information on security, then there is the Black Hat conference. But if you're one of those networking or IT generalists who is in charge of a staff of half a dozen or less, if your job is to make sure it all kind of just works together, then Interop is the place to be, because making it all work together is what Interop is really about, whether we're talking about the technology, the products, or the people. Well, Scott, I appreciate you being with us. One last thing before you go. Where can people keep up with all of your deep thoughts and opinions on things? Are you on the Tweety Pipes or the inner tubes or whatever they are?
I am indeed. It is ZDE Ferguson, so ZDEFERGUSON. That is my Twitter handle. I do write on occasion for Information Week, not as much as I would like, but I am somehow floating around, so a lot of times if you see Information Week staff report, it kind of, you might have an idea of where it comes from. But I am always on Twitter, and that's where a lot of great conversations happen, besides, of course, the radio.
Well, Scott, thank you so much. We very much appreciate it. We'll look forward to seeing you on the Tweety Pipes. That was Scott Ferguson, who is director of business of what's
something.
What the heck do you do for us, Scott?
That's a really good question. What do I do for you guys? No, I'm actually the director of audience development. So I work a lot with the InformationWeek.com editorial team. I do. I direct some of the news coverage. I oversee the newsletters that fill your inbox every day. I try to work with a group of freelance staffers in there, so we are covering every aspect of technology that the audience wants to see and read about. And I also just try to make sure that our general web traffic is good and we're fulfilling our business needs. So I do cross a little bit into those boundaries, but it's always with the audience in mind.
So there you have it. If there's something you really want to hear about on the radio, in a conference, on the pages of Information Week, or anywhere else at UBM, then sending a Twitter message to ZDE Ferguson is what you need to do. Well, that was, as we said, Scott Ferguson. Glad he was able to join us. We're looking ahead to our next episode, which is going to be coming to you tomorrow morning at 11 a.m. Pacific time. That's 2 p.m. Eastern time. And then tomorrow we do not have an episode at 4 p.m. Pacific. There's a very good reason for that. The show floor, the expo floor here at Interop, closes at 3 p.m. tomorrow. So our afternoon show will be at 2 p.m. You will be with us right up to the close of the expo floor tomorrow, and we'll look forward to a lot of great guests between now and then. Well, for Scott Ferguson and everyone here at Interop UBM and Interop Radio, I'm Kurt Franklin saying thanks so much. Hey, we'll see you bright and early tomorrow morning.